Welcome to Cascade Church Podcast,
a church we hope is both safe to be and safe to grow.
Enjoy!
It is great to see you, Sam. As you walk down. It's good to see all of you. I was just looking at Sam first, so I wanted to start there. My name is Kurt. I'm a co-pastor here at Cascade, and we're continuing a message series we started last week on the book of Nehemiah. So we're going to be looking at Nehemiah 2, Electric Boogaloo, today. It's going to be very exciting. The sequel, even better than the first. A quick note when we talk about Scripture, Nehemiah, the study and all of it. I'm very excited this morning to preach. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited about the Bible in general. And one of the things that I love about the Bible is how we understand, how we come to it, and coming to it in new ways and new understanding. I used to grow up in a place in a realm where the Bible, where we were going to read it on a Sunday morning, and the words would just be up on the screen, or you would read it on the page. And at the end of every reading of the Bible, it was just the pastor, and it kind of felt like the collective of Christianity looking at you and being like, right? Get it? Is your life changed yet? And I felt like I was culturing a place where I had to be like, yes, so good. No, I get it. It changed me. Because what we were collectively doing is we were saying, if we elevate this text to an unimpeachable height, and we just say, this is so good, and this changes our lives, and this is our sacred text, and we all agree that by lifting it up and saying, this is so good and everything that's in it is perfect, then we'll be changed and transformed by it. And what I ended up finding is that for me personally, I wasn't changed at all by that reading and engagement with Scripture. It became this like this mystery text that got dropped from an airplane, and I was spending so much time pretending that it was changing me, that I wasn't actually listening to what it was trying to say and the story it was. Why I get excited about the Bible and looking at it is I actually think it has a lot to do with who we are today. The reason why it's a sacred text is because it's stories of people just like you and me wrestling with what does it mean to be alive and awake and aware of the world today, and how do we understand who God is in the midst of that, and how do we understand who we are? And so one of the things I love about getting into Scripture, and hopefully we'll do this today, is to think about what would it be like to be there? What would it be like to be one of the characters? Because that we are a character in that same kind of story today. The Bible wasn't like we spotlight the one time that God showed up in earth, and then we wrote down all those stories, and we're just going to keep coming back to him forever and be like, wouldn't it have been great, right? But rather, it's an ongoing story that we're a part of today. And so I hope as we go through that you'll look at it wherever you come from, whatever your background is with the Bible, first time, long time first time, whatever you come to it with. Think about how does this impact where I'm at today in my life and what's going on around me? And are there similarities in this story that resonate with me? So a bit of background on Nehemiah before we read. We're dealing with the Jewish people who had, we won't go through the full history again like we did last week, but if you just think about King David was a kind of high point, certainly in the story of the Jewish people with where they existed. They had their own nation. They had the walls of their city, Jerusalem, was strong. They were able to worship and go about their lives, and that had come crashing down in about 500 BC. So before Common Era, before Christ, 500 years before that, the walls had been destroyed of Jerusalem and the Jewish people had been scattered. This is where we talk about the Jewish diaspora. They're spread out all over the place. Now, some of the more educated young men are taken and captured and taken to Babylon to serve in the in service to the royalty and the kings that are there. And everyone else is scattered about. Nehemiah in the same way that Daniel, another book of the Bible, are two examples of people that are taken into service. And the question is, what do they do with this unasked for, unearned privilege while the rest of their people are suffering and scattered? And we talked last week with Nehemiah, what do you do with privilege? As he was the cupbearer for the king, meaning he got to get drunk for a living. You taste all the wine for the king to make sure it's not being poisoned. And there's a closeness that he developed with King Antiochus. I said that wrong. It is Xerxes. And so he had this connection. And one day he comes in and he's sad. And they're like, why are you sad? You know, as a king, he does that whole thing with like, you should smile more. And I don't love it. But he was like, you look sad. What's going on? He's like, well, how can I be happy when my people are scattered all over and the walls of the place where I'm from are destroyed? And so he grants Nehemiah the ability to go back to Jerusalem, to look at the wreckage and to rebuild the walls. So we're going to pick up in Nehemiah 2 after he's gone and he's walked around. If you have a Bible app with you, maybe a Bible Gateway, you can pull it up. If you have a Bible in front of you, great. Another quick note is in general at Cascade, we use the NRSV as a translation, just because we feel like it's one of the least problematic of them all. And sadly, that's kind of what we're going for when it comes to biblical translations. All right, Nehemiah 2, we're going to start in verse 17. Then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins. By the way, just a set, then I said to them, that is Nehemiah speaking to the people who are there among the wreckage of the city. Then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so we may no longer suffer disgrace. I told them that the hand of my God had been gracious upon me, and also the words of the king had spoken to me. Then they said, let us start building. So they committed themselves to the common good. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they mocked and ridiculed us, saying, what is this that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? And then I replied to them, the God of heaven is the one who will give us success, and we, his servants, are going to start building. But you have no share or claim or memorial in Jerusalem. All right, so let's unpack a little bit of what's happening. Nehemiah shows up, and I think it's interesting to note, it's not like the people who were there in Jerusalem were unaware that the walls had been destroyed. They knew that the city lied in disgrace. But it's interesting that an outsider can come in and that he can speak into being something that the folks that are there aren't able to see in the same way. I think it's beautiful to note that sometimes we need things to be shaken up in our lives. Sometimes we exclude the voices of people that are outside of what we consider our in-group or the people that know, and we can do that to our own peril. What if they decide to be like, Nehemiah, you're like a king's cupbearer. We're not listening to you. That there actually would have been something that they could have missed there, a galvanizing moment where they could have done something to their own benefit and to the benefit of everyone else who lived there by listening to Nehemiah. And so he serves this great, like, let's go build that wall. And I know, okay? I'm going to say this a lot when we go through Nehemiah. There's a lot of ways to build a wall. And it's been a bit co-opted. It's like you can't wear a red hat with white lettering and just be like, what are you talking about? Just a normal red hat. But this is a different kind of understanding of the people that have no privilege and no power and are being ridiculed in a land trying to reclaim their own dignity. Now, as they do this, we see three people show up. Sanballat, Geshem, and Tobiah. And as they show up, these are governors of the regions around Jerusalem. They are not Jewish. They are not Israelites. They actually have a lot to lose by the reestablishment of Jerusalem. If Jerusalem were to be able to rebuild its walls and to be able to have some sort of power autonomy within that area, it would actually weaken their power. And isn't that interesting? that when there is an opportunity in your life or with a group of people that like there's something we're going to reclaim and rebuild, that you can hear from people that would say, don't do that, or to mock it or to ridicule it. The moment that you decide, like, I think there's something where I'm going to step into a sense of understanding of my own dignity, my own belonging, that I am allowed to take up space here too. And actually, from Nehemiah, that I'm being sent. The thing that I think that's most interesting about that second piece is they say, you are mocking the king by doing this. Who sent Nehemiah? The king. But that's not what Nehemiah says. Nehemiah doesn't say, actually, I got my letter right here. The king sent me. Don't worry about it. He says, this is ultimately the story of God. The story of God with us. This mystery and generating force of everyone and all things is a part of this story. And that ultimately, the king and everyone else is a part of God's story. I love that reframing. I think sometimes when people talk about God and making reference to God, when there's another thing that you could reference, oh, this thing happened and that, is playing a kind of God card of making religious things that are like, well, this is just the way the world works. But how I see it in this story is what Nehemiah is doing is that you're trying to play politics. You're governors of this area, and you're trying to say, did you go up the ladder of hierarchy to say you belong? And actually, I'm calling upon another hierarchy. And this is the hierarchy that shatters all hierarchy. The God of all people is inviting me to take up space that we, as the city of Jerusalem, get to claim as our identity and who we are. That this is a place that we are. It's a way not of saying, well, it's a God card, who's the most powerful one of all, but it's actually saying there's a God that sees the humanity and the image of God is in me and it's in you. So it's no longer a battle where I defeat you, but actually we deserve to belong here as co-equals with you. Now, this is the thing that stuck with me this week. Have you ever received critique or criticism? Maybe in your job, your workplace. If you're a parent, you have. If you're a child, you have. A student, in so many places and ways, we receive some measure of criticism or critique about who we are, how we function, our performance, a project that we worked on and turned in. And one of the questions that I wrestle with is, what do we do with critique? In general, there's lots of different ways to respond, but it seems that we can either internalize all bits of critique as the truth about ourselves has finally been laid bare. If you're like me, are you familiar with the term imposter syndrome? Yeah. Imposter syndrome is like, yeah, you have just been fooling everybody forever, which is literally what my teachers told me. They were like, yeah, you got away with this in elementary school. You're not getting away with this in junior high. And then in junior high, you're like, yeah, you got away with it here. You're not going to get away with this in high school. And then in high school, they're like, yeah, you got away with it here, but you're not going to get away with it in college. And then in college, you're like, you got away with this here. We're not going to get away with it in your real life. And my entire life, I was like, well, clearly I'm a fraud about to be found out at the next level. That's the entirety of my life. And the idea is that no matter who you are and what you've done and what you've accomplished, at some point, someone's going to show up and be like, actually, you thought you graduated school, but you didn't. And everyone here knows you don't have this thing or this capability, and it all comes crashing down around you. There's a way of internalizing critique is like, I had gigs up. They finally figured me out. There's another way of saying that anything somebody brings against you, you're like, haters gonna hate once again. Why do I attract haters all the time? These people don't know how great I am. There's obviously no sense in listening to these people because they're just out trying to drag me down because they hate how great I am. Both of these ways of being in the world seem to maybe not be the full truth. So how do we decide? Now, I've been a pastor for my entire adult life. This is kind of what I've done the whole time, 20 years of this. And when you preach at different times, and this has not happened here, but at churches before, you get some interesting criticism and critique. And I usually find that people like to deliver it immediately after your message. This is just like a beeline straight towards you, and you're like, well, here we go. One Sunday, I was talking about when I was younger. I was like, you know, my friends and I, we were screwing around over here, and then these different things happened. And a beeline right for me, and an older gentleman said, I noticed in your sermon that you used the term screw around. And I was like, that checks out. Yeah, I'm sure I did. I don't manuscript, but sounds like me. That's what I would say. And he's like, you know what that means, right? And I was like, that doesn't feel like an invitation for my side of the story. I'll be honest with you. I meant fooling around. That's what I think it means. And he goes, no, that's not what it means. It means, and then he said the F word to me in church, around. That's what you said, and that's what that means. And I was like, this doesn't feel like the kind of gentleman to get into a debate about semantics right now. Maybe we're just going to roll with and be like, oh, good to know. I was not aware that that was how those words were linked. And in fact, I rather intentionally chose not to say the word that you just said to me from the pulpit. One of the things that you have to do afterwards is, well, what do I do with that? Do I laugh and dismiss? Do I listen and internalize and say, time to strike that from my vocabulary for all time? Or maybe things that aren't so humorous, but other feedback on the way that you manage yourself or held yourself. Or actually, we were having this conversation and I felt like you weren't paying attention, that you were looking past me. Or maybe that you made this joke or this offhanded remark and that actually really hurt. One Sunday, we were preaching a message on forgiveness. And at this church, we had multiple services. And after the second service, we had an email that said, hey, you were talking about forgiveness and how we step into that and how do we forgive others. I've actually been a part of abusive relationships throughout my life. And it's that exact teaching that led me back into relationship with my abuser for years. I think it would be helpful to nuance that conversation before the next service. Well, what do you do with that? Is this another hater that I hold on par with the guy that said screw around the F word? Or is this actually something different that I should listen to? And so I want to talk through a couple of ideas that might be helpful for us to consider. How do we tell the difference? And because I am a pastor, I have two words that start with the same letter. Meaning that, how do we tell if this is insight or insult? How do you tell the difference between these things? The first is, I do think it's helpful to consider the source. Who is bringing the information to you? And where are they coming from? Is there any benefit they have? What benefit would they have to you making a change or integrating their critique? And what would they lose if you didn't? Is this a person who's close to me that has demonstrated that they are invested in my thriving? Or this is a person that would be pretty pumped on my downfall? Those might be helpful things to consider. I think we can see in the story that when it comes to Nehemiah hearing the critique of Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, I don't think these are people that are committed to my well-being. I don't think that these are individuals that want me to thrive and succeed in the mission that I've been sent here to do. And so that should probably influence how I hear their critiques and telling me that this is not something I should go through. In the story of the woman who had been in an abusive relationship because of messages preached on forgiveness, it's pretty clear when I consider that source that that's information that would be worthwhile of integrating into what we say and how we communicate. What does she have to gain? Is it maybe a clearing of her conscience that someone else doesn't have to go through the same pain and suffering that she did? There's not something that she would gain otherwise that would make that critique or that insight suspect. The second is, I think it'd be helpful to get perspective from a trusted friend. In general in life, when we go to get perspective from friends, I hope, I pray that you have some gas you up friends. They're friends that you're like, so I was driving here and this person cut me off and they're like, well, let's go find them right now. How dare anyone do that to you? And you're like, yeah, someone came up to me and they said something. You're like, well, they're wrong. I mean, finish what they're going to say, but they were wrong. Those are great friends to have. It's great to feel so protected and like fiercely protected by another human being. They may not be the right person to go get perspective on the inside of another. You also might have friends that are like, yeah, they were probably right. I've been saying this for years. They may not be the right person either. But there are people that you know that have been around for years. They've been a helpful sounding board, and they've offered good perspective on, I think maybe this is where this person could be coming from. How does it strike you? How do you internalize it? What parts of you feel threatened by hearing that? What would it look like to move forward with that advice or that critique or that insight into your life? A lot of times when we get stuck in a situation, I'll go back to the example of the man, the screw around man. It's easy for me to be like, right, in this space. When it was just him and me, that was not the energy I was bringing to the conversation. When it was just him and me, one person who was very certain I had said the equivalent of the F word on a Sunday morning, and another person presently not as sure that he had not just said that, I wasn't quite sure what we were going to do or what was right. And in that situation where you just have two people or two parties, another perspective can help inform maybe some more of the dynamics that could have been going on. And to show a bit of the cards in that, there are bits of critique and criticism that you are going to receive in your life that have way more to do about the person who's telling you it than it has to do about you and what happened. This was clearly a trigger for this man. And at some point of his life, he had been taught this and believed this and had internalized it. So when he heard me say screw around, he was like, well, someone's got to tell him the way they told me. We've got to clear this up. That doesn't mean that it was something to totally throw away, but I didn't need to internalize it the same way he internalized it, because he was telling me more about his story than he was telling me about what I had said, right? And a good friend that can offer that perspective can help inform some of that, where we can start to sort that out. The last one, I want to be careful with this one, so walk with me through that, is regardless of the critique or the insight, is to identify the thread of truth in it. Every critique, every criticism has a bit of truth. There's a true thing in there. Even the harshest criticism, there's something there. And I think a lot of times if we dismiss whole cloth, the other individual or what they're saying and everything that they're saying, there's something that we don't get to learn from or grow from, or an awareness or an insight into how the world works. It's just a missed opportunity. The story I just said, yes, I did not, I still say screw around. But if I hadn't said, well, what's the truth that he's trying to communicate? What's the thread of truth in this? The thread of truth is we do need to be careful about the words we say because our words have impact. And that's worth considering and integrating into how I communicate to other people. And a part of that is when we seek to identify the thread of truth, what I found oftentimes in my life is when I've received criticism, is I'll talk about it with another person, a trusted friend, a spouse, a partner, and they'll say, I think there's some truth here. I think that's something you can integrate. And like, yeah, but I just don't like how they said it to me. I don't like when they said it to me. Like, they could have been nicer. Have they ever heard of the compliment sandwich? They should have said something nice about me. I like your shirt. hey, in your email language, you shouldn't use these things. And also, I hope you have a great day. Great shoes. We can get so stuck on how the information was shared with us that we're actually not identifying what is the information shared with us and do I have an opportunity to grow from it. And in fact, there have been times through the coaching of trusted friends where we've said, look, I hope there is no one as committed to my growth as me. I want to be able to learn and evolve and change my mind and be a different person tomorrow and next week and next year than I am today. That's part of the invitation of God. The invitation of this whole thing is that how do we step more fully into who we were created to be, which is an individual that is aware of injustice and moving against it, aware of exclusions and moving towards greater levels of inclusion and love and peace and bridge building. And sometimes the information that's going to help me get there will not be delivered in the way that I would like it to be delivered. Am I more committed to growth or am I more committed to etiquette? Now, that doesn't mean that I don't address that etiquette with the individuals that are sharing that with you and say, hey, I think you're sharing this with me because you're committed to my well-being and growth. Can I tell you something about how I receive information? This is something that could be helpful in the future, but thank you so much for sharing it with me. Thank you so much for being there. That's totally fair. But sometimes if we can move beyond the emotion, which I usually find is within me, when someone critiques something of me, I immediately feel the need to defend. And usually my first line of defense is intent. I'm so sorry that happened, but clearly that wasn't my intention. You know who I am. And I can tend to value my intentions over the impact of what's being said. But if I can sit with what's the truth is being here, I don't have to be defensive. I can breathe deep in a different space, and I can learn how to process and come back to that conversation and potentially grow from it. I don't want other people's delivery to slow my ability to grow and develop into who God is inviting me to be. And so here's how I want to close our time this morning. Is I would imagine, as I talk about critiques and different times, you have stories the way I have the screw around story, the way I have the forgiveness message, an abuse story, the way I have lots of stories in your life that you received it. Some of you have probably received critique or feedback this week that you have not been able to shake, and you're like, hey, Kurt, I kind of came for Sunday to move or past that, not to face that headlong. I want to give you a chance to be able to talk about it as much as you want to or feel safe about it. And maybe it would be best for you this morning to talk about critique you received a while ago, where you have a bit more space. And to say, how did you decide what to internalize, what to integrate about that critique, and what did you decide to not integrate into yourself in life? And how did you know the difference? I just shared the three things that came to mind for me in conversations with other trusted friends. Considering the source, getting perspective from a trusted friend, and finding the thread of truth. But I'm sure you have other insights into how you determine that I'd love for you to be able to share with one another. And so what we do here at Cascade is we just turn around and we make kind of loose groups of the people are around. We say our names so everyone kind of knows who people are. And then we just have an opportunity to share. What do you do with critique? What has been helpful for you to do with critique? What have you found when you look back? That was not helpful, but that was my relationship to critique or criticism. If the idea of turning and talking to your neighbor about how you've internalized or rejected critique is your nightmare, get real interested in your phone. This is an optional sharing time right now, right? We all process in different ways. You might need to internally process, and that's beautiful. Do that and use that for yourself. But some of you, it's helpful to talk, and so that's what we want to do. So I invite you, if you would turn to the people around you, you can also just say, hey, I'm going to be looking at my phone, internal processing here. But if you would go ahead and discuss for the next couple of minutes, that'd be gorgeous.
Thanks for listening.
We hope you're able to join us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. in person.
Have a great day.